About 8 miles south of the Syrian border in Jordan is the world's second-largest refugee camp. The sprawling temporary city is home to about 80,000 Syrians who fled their country's civil war. Hastily erected in 2012, the Zaatari refugee camp covers about 2 square miles and has evolved and morphed into a quasi-permanent community. It's also become Jordan's fourth-largest city. But funding shortfalls are an ongoing challenge. VPR's Nina Keck visited the camp last week and prepared this report.
Just getting the complicated permits to enter the camp took weeks. Then once I arrive, there are multiple checkpoints to get through. My interpreter, Ihab Mudasep, does all the talking.
Okay, mashallah.
We make our way over to the main market street, a busy road with hundreds of small shops and food stands. I'm struck by all the people walking or biking. Clusters of children are everywhere. There are a few cars that drive past, but I see a lot more carts pulled by donkeys. The low roar of a generator fills the air. The road is packed dirt, and it's dusty. Narrower side streets not dried by the sun are rivers of mud, and I wonder how people keep it out of their homes. Mohammed Al-Taher, a liaison officer with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, gives an overview of how the camp is run. He says 47 different non-governmental organizations and agencies provide services here.
We have a court, we have a civil register here, we have FPD, which is Family Protection Unit, we have like 16 different schools.
There are 27 community centers, 2 field hospitals, 9 healthcare clinics, and a birthing center. That's important, says Al-Taher, because 60 to 80 babies are born at the camp every week.
We have all the services here inside that camp, okay? We have it, but it is not enough. We have everything, but it is not enough.
Costs keep rising. While Zaatari was initially a tent city, today refugees live in what are called caravans, one-room prefabricated metal houses that measure 16 feet by 9.5 feet. Newer models are slightly larger and have a small kitchen and toilet. Families with more children qualify for more caravans. While those in the camp do have access to water, it's just cold. Al-Taher says portable gas or propane heaters provide heat in the winter. But seeing how thin the walls are, I can't imagine people in the camp ever feel truly warm.
Because, you know, the electricity, the power bill, it is so high. We provide electricity for them between 6 p.m. until 2 a.m. daily.
They're constructing a large solar panel array and looking at other forms of alternative energy. They have to save money, he says. After almost 5 years of violence, Al-Taher admits it's getting harder to find funding. Governments and aid agencies are feeling tapped out, and Jordan's economy, like many in the region, is struggling, hurt by the years of war, declining tourism, and closed borders. Al-Taher wouldn't estimate how much it costs to run the camp, saying those figures are hard to quantify. The non-governmental groups that help them don't like to share their financial data, he says. And the number and needs of refugees have fluctuated over the last several years. In 2013, the European Commissioner's Humanitarian Office in Amman estimated the cost of running Zaatari at $500,000 a day. But in the years since, that's likely ballooned. Yet what the facts and figures don't tell you is that 28-year-old Ayman Al-Shouli, a Syrian farmer, found love in the camp. He fled the violence 4 years ago and met his wife in Zaatari. They now have 2 children, and he sells shoes at a small shop on the main market street.
Life goes on. Life continues. Life is not going to stop.
Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah.
Thank God. Thank God.
2 doors down, Amine Al-Hassel, a 31-year-old mother of 3, has found a safe haven in Zaatari. She runs a shop that sells children's and baby clothes. Her 2-year-old son sits on a large cushion behind the counter. Speaking through an interpreter, she says that she fled Syria to protect her children and admits life in the camp is not easy.
It is very difficult to run a shop here because I have to leave my house and I have to be here. And in summer it's hot and in winter it's cold and I'm away from my house.
It's exhausting, she says, but she doesn't worry about bombs falling on her children. And for now, that's enough. Mohammed Alamit, a father of 5, was a police officer back in Syria. He fled to Jordan after the Free Syrian Army kidnapped him and threatened to kill him if he stayed. The safety at the refugee camp is everything, he says. But he admits it's taken years to come to grips with living in limbo.
When we first came here, the situation was tragic. I came here on the 6th of November 2012, and everything was tense. And I would sit by myself in a tent sometimes, and I would cry away from my family. But the situation starts to develop, starts getting caravans and start having services. And thank God now the situation is not bad.
Welcome.
Across the camp, Khalil Al-Hariri invites me into his friend's shop. He's a singer who fled Syria 4 years ago. I do weddings and parties for kids, he tells me, through my interpreter. I dress up as a clown, whatever it takes to make people smile. He launches into a sample and asks me if I can help him find work in America. He tells me about his 5 kids and lets me take his picture outside on his bicycle. As I thank him and start to leave, he reaches out to stop me. I want to thank you, he says, for following up on our stories and listening to us. It's important, he says, for people to understand. For VPR News, I'm Nina Keck at the Zaatari Refugee Camp in Jordan.
And support for VPR's reporting in Jordan was made possible in part by the VPR Journalism Fund.